Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
The snail and the whale. I'll say it again. The snail and the whale. No, it's not a biography of Cummings and Johnston the last few years. It's something much more entertaining and much more wonderful that's part of the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. And to discuss some of the exciting things that are coming along in the summer, in the next few months with respect to the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, it's a welcome back, a hearty welcome back to our inspired soul extraordinaire, marketing officer for the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, Julie Ellerby. How are you, Julie?
I'm really well. Thank you so much. It's been far too long, actually. It's really nice to be back.
Well, we did a couple of features, I think, with Craig, and we obviously did some pieces on the pantomime that wasn't a pantomime, or sorry, the Christmas show that isn't a Christmas show, that kind of wandered around in a number of ways. And clearly this addition, I like to think of it as an addition to our broadcasting scenarios, courtesy of Siren Radio and indeed the University of Lincoln, still enables the message to get out there, even though, as I say, some of us have to go on the beach to do it. I'm just referring to my backdrop there, but what the hell. Julie, clearly all theatres have had challenges, and in Lincoln, I suppose, one of the high-profile casualties was very much the drill hall. And that sort of obviously went. I mean, thankfully, the new Theatre Royal Lincoln is, if not thriving, it's still in existence. We've done a few pieces, obviously, with the guys at the new Theatre Royal Lincoln and flagging up some of their exciting things that we've got coming. But it's so fantastic that the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, which serves a not a completely different audience, because there is crossover, but it's a more specialised audience and it's a more kind of interesting audience in many ways, is at least set and ready to actually cope with a number of key changes and indeed has coped with the pandemic that we've all been going through.
I mean, it's very kind of you to say that we are appearing to be thriving, and that's wonderful, and I think we have survived this, but if you look at the state of the arts locally and across the board, survival is success at the moment. I think anybody who's still going at this point has been incredibly successful and fortunate. We're still devastated that we've lost our friends at the Lincoln Drill Hall. I know that it's recently been taken over by Lincoln College and it will still be open in some form. What that's going to look like, we don't know yet. But the team that they had at the Lincoln Drill Hall were the soul of that building for that period of time, and the work they did was amazing. So all of us on a very personal level at LPAC are really quite gutted to see that change happen. We're really pleased to see that the likes of New Theatre Royal and the Blue Room are still going. So, you know, we're still part of a really rich cultural offer. And what we really want to see going into the next kind of few months and the next year is just to rebuild that kind of audience confidence and get people going back to the theatre again. And I'm sure that people have missed it so much. You know, I guess when you haven't had something for so long, you really start to appreciate the role that it played in your life and how it enabled you to go and meet your friends or go on dates. You know, it brought interest to the end of your working week. I feel that now that we'll be opening up again, we're really serving such a valuable purpose and function for the people of Lincoln.
Now, talking about that, of course, the whole aspect opens up with a mathematician, a comedic mathematician. Who would have ever thought that we'd actually be able to say that a mathematician could actually be fun and amusing and wonderful in their own right? So talk us through what's happening with respect to this July event. I think it's July the 15th, when a mathematician and stand-up comedian actually comes to Lincoln.
Okay, so we are kicking off our summer season with Harry Baker, and he's got his stand-up comedy gig, which is called I Am 10,000, which is probably dated now because obviously with lockdown, he's probably a few more days older than 10,000 now. But it was about being 10,000 days old, and it's kind of themed around kind of like a coming of age, that stage of life. If you hear cheeping in the background, I have got baby chicks in the room with me, and they do get loud sometimes. So So yeah, so it's a stand-up show, and he's actually like a slam poet as well. So it's a mix of kind of brilliant nerdy maths, humour, supreme cleverness, and that kind of slam poetry, kind of really smart kind of wordplay and word delivery. So it's going to be something not just for people who are into mathematics, but I think if you are, you are going to be really impressed. But it's very much for kind of everybody, if you want something that is really fiery, witty and quick paced.
And indeed, a whole sort of opportunity to engage with your pi, your r squared, with a variety of other Pythagorean scenarios. I'm sure that people will be running out of the LPAC auditorium screaming Eureka before you know where they are, which is great stuff. Let's progress on to, again, something which is great news, because obviously the line is, if you missed out on 2020, well, some of us are still living through it. It's all very good. Fear not, because you have actually managed to bring back Horrible Histories, Gorgeous Georgians and Vile Victorians, and indeed Jenny Eclair. So that, again, is very good news for a kind of reprise of the 2020 season that didn't happen for the 2021 summer season, which, all being well, is happening, because let's face it, we're not going to Portugal.
No, exactly right. So, so some of the performances that we were going to have last year, we've just simply kind of pushed them back to this year. So they're still going ahead. So if you were looking at the brochure and going, oh, I really, really wanted to see that, then do check our programme again for the summer, because you might find that that's there. Horrible Histories have been to us before with the different shows. This is a brand new show. They are phenomenal. My eldest daughter, she's a couple of years younger then, when she went with my husband, they were absolutely raving about it. I think, what was it she said? She couldn't believe that they got to say poo 5 times. She was blown away by that. It was the funniest, cheekiest, most...
She should actually become part of the cabinet office of the current government. They say that an awful lot, and an awful lot more, it would seem, basically. But still, let's not go there.
They do, but I think this was probably arguably more entertaining and lighthearted.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, Julie's daughter could make a far better job of running the country than, shall we say, some politicians. No names, I'm just putting it out there. It was just a thought there.
I wouldn't put it past her, but actually my youngest is the tough negotiator. She would be the one that you want to have kind of at your board table.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, as you can see, the lights are back on at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. And indeed that will be. I mean, again, we have missed it from that perspective. Julie, you've been on further. You're still sort of coping with respect to the way that things are actually going. What's the vibe been from other sort of colleagues within your experience? I mean, I'm thinking about Holly Cox, who celebrated her birthday a couple of days ago, I believe. We've also got, obviously, the rest of the team, etc. And let's not face it, the students who had a challenging year in terms of actually working through the last seed area that things were there. I mean, when was the last time you actually crossed the threshold, for instance?
For me personally, quite a while ago. it's been a tough year. I think university, we can all agree, it's been incredibly challenging. We all have that shared experience, and yet at the same time, I think everybody's individual experience is unique. So people have experienced that in their own way. So for example, Holly has been on maternity leave, which is an absolute pleasure and a joy, and she has baby Harry, who's now a year old. And Holly's only just come back from maternity
leave. COVID baby.
Yeah, with a new baby. So it's wonderful to have her back. We've really missed her in the team, and she just brings so much energy with her. So I'm sure, I mean, I can't speak for her, but I think, you know, she's had her own focus and her own changes going on in the last year. And she's come back to us at a really good time, because we're just starting to open up again. So it's great to have her back on board. The technical team have been in the building the most. So even though we might have a doors closed for public, which are now open, the technical team have been in there supporting the School of Fine and Performing Arts, making sure that all the spaces are, you know, operating effectively in a distanced way, and doing a lot of the routine kind of maintenance work that we need to do for theatre throughout the course of the year anyway. Mm. So they have been, to them, in terms of their going into work, it hasn't changed that much for them in recent months. Mm. Personally, I have been working from home. I've been full-time furloughed and then part-time furloughed. And then next month I'll be going back full-time again. And actually working from home has been working really, really well. I think if there's one kind of positive you can take from this,
chicks can be supported. The chicks can be supported, quite literally. You know, they quite happily away.
Okay, so I am, you know, taking on other hobbies in the background. So I have got chicks in an incubator and a brooder. I could do that in the office. They don't need me to be present all the time. But no, it's more, I feel the last year has really altered everybody's culture of work and our understanding of, you know, where you need to be doing your job. So a lot of us have had the access to things like we use Microsoft Teams, but we hadn't been embracing that technology to its fullest before, whereas now we've all just had to get on board. And I think that's a real positive, actually, is that, you know, sometimes you can be reluctant to change, but change has been thrust upon us, and now we all have these new skills. So, you know, I'm going to take that as a win.
And let's face it, there are those of us who still maintain that Zoom was a 1960s ice lolly with lots of colourings and various other things in there as well. You're too young to remember that, Judy, so we'll just sort of step away from that side of things and move into the joy of Julia Donaldson and, of course, what we started this particular piece off, The Snail and the Whale, which by the time this comes round, in terms of its appearance at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre on the 24th of July and the 25th of July, hopefully people will be quite happily able to actually come into the system. They might not even be That's wearing right. masks, but we don't know.
We don't know. So we are monitoring the situation really closely. So we have recently been accredited as Good to Go, which is the kind of national campaign to demonstrate that you are taking things seriously, that you are putting all the measures in place that you reasonably can. So, I mean, obviously it's up to individual, but we think that our environment is going to be just a warm, friendly place where you can just relax and enjoy the show. For The Snail and the Whale, we have actually reduced the capacity down. So for that one, we are doing a social distance capacity. So if you are going to bring your children to it, you will have your kind of family unit. And I think that should give people a lot of confidence that if that's their first visit to a theatre in a year, especially with children, I think it's a really good one to have a go at, to be honest. There's also four showings of it. So there's two on the Friday, two on the Saturday, all at different times. So again, if you've got young children, trying to plan your day around when they're at their best, you know, which for each child can be different. Some kids are really great in the morning and crash in the afternoon. Others, you know, that just after lunch is going to be their prime time.
Again, Julie, you seem to be describing the Cabinet Office here, but, you know, let's step away from that. You know, sometimes they're good in the morning, sometimes they're bad in the afternoon. We just don't know.
You just know how to work them to their best, that's all. They yeah. need somebody, you know, a big parent figure in there to kind of manage the snack times for them.
Quite right. And talking about snacks, of course, we had the wonderful portmanteau word recently on the programme, which was blanquette, as in blanket, B-L-A-N-Q-U-E-T-T-E, a kind of sense of having a banquet with a big blanket. So we're kind of picnicking, in other words, and indeed you can go for a picnic and blanket for theatre in the fresh air, it would seem, at the International Bomber Command Centre. Would you like to talk us through this event that, again, takes place on the 22nd of August and a family fun day, which is supported by the Cultural Recovery Fund, the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, and, of course, the IBCC, the International Bomber Command Centre?
So this is absolutely huge, and we are really excited about this. So again, something positive that's come out of this is that we have been successful in our bid for the Cultural Recovery Fund, and so has the IBCC, the International Bomber Command Centre. And it's because of that funding that we are now working in collaboration together. So we are going to be holding events up at the IBCC, which, if you haven't been before, is just a beautiful, I don't want to call it an estate, it's a really, you know, open area. There's gardens there, you've got the iconic spire, they have a cafe, and they have marquees that they put up as well. So it's a really wonderful environment for hosting an event. So we are going to have several events that are taking place there throughout the summer. One of the key highlights is that Family Fun Day, where we're going to have the Three Musketeers as our main show, but we also have Rhubarb Theatre, who are a local children's theatre group. They'll be doing happenings and storytelling. We're going to be having like family-focused workshops there as well. So it's going to be a fantastic day out, most of it in the open air, some of it will be in marquees. And it's just a really wonderful opportunity to take your children out and have some really wholesome entertainment. We have other events taking place there as well. We have the Lord Chamberlain's Men doing Macbeth, which is going to be an evening performance. So not
glad you said the Scottish play, Julie, because clearly I'd be a bit concerned to actually mention at this stage. But Julie, you're protected. All's good.
I don't have that. That superstition, even though, you know, I've been kind of raised up through theatre, I'm happy to say the name. So the Scottish play, Macbeth, is going to be performed out in the open air under the stars. We're inviting people to book picnics and to bring chairs and blankets with them. It's going to be quite a sophisticated event, I think. So it's not really one for the young children. We've got the family day separate. This is
out damn spot.
So it's a bit heavy for preschoolers, you know. but yeah, it's something that I think is going to be incredibly welcome in the city. And when you're up there, you've got these beautiful views across their gardens. It's going to feel incredibly special. The IBCC put on fantastic food, so they've got picnics to book. You can also even book a three-course meal in their marquee beforehand if you wanted to. So if you're in need of like a really, really fancy, luxurious evening out, that is the absolute one to put in your calendar for summer.
Fantastic. And Jenny Eclair, is she coming back to actually return for a performance, I believe?
She is, yes. So Jenny Eclair, she's turned 60. And again, I think a lot of comedians like to kind of have these stages of life, moments in time, kind of themed gigs every once in a while. So this is very much about...
We're laughing with you, Jenny, not at you. We're laughing with you.
She hopes so, but actually she does invite you to talk behind her back about her lockdown weight gain during the interval. So, so she's very much talking about ageing and womanhood and just a stage of life, but also just a bit of fun. I think it's just going to be a really good laugh.
I bet she doesn't have a routine, Julie, about a young mum who actually keeps chicks in the background during lockdown. Now, that is a comedic scenario. Very good. You actually have sort of added chicks on to her.
I'm not sure if stand-up comedy is in my future, but if somebody wants to write a piece about me, I won't make complaints.
All of this can, of course, be found on lpac.co.uk. That's the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre.co.uk. Is that presumably the best place to actually find out details about Horrible Histories, Gorgeous Georgians, Vile Victorians, The Snail and the Whale, Jenny Eclair, and all of the other things we've shared that will be happening as far as the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre over the next few months is actually concerned?
It is, yeah. So our website's a great place to look. If you're not already on the mailing list, I'd say now is a fantastic time to join the mailing list because we are sending out regular updates about events that are unfolding. We're still planning the autumn-winter season. There's a lot in there, which I'm sure I'll come back and talk to you about later. But I think it's a really good time now to get on that mailing list to make sure that you have advance notice about booking. Very excitingly, behind the scenes, we are working on getting a new website built. So I know that something it's probably, you know, frustrated many people over the last year, especially, is that our website is getting a bit slow and clunky. You know, we've had it since 2013, and we've been listening to people's feedback about how challenging our website can be sometimes to browse and book tickets. So over the course of this summer, we are building a brand new, very shiny, very modern website. So hopefully anybody who has had those frustrations recently, and know that there have been, they will all be alleviated as we go into that autumn season.
Who knows, there might even be a place for these kind of inspirational podcasts to actually appear in some way, shape or form. I just put it out there. It's a way forward of promoting the whole bits and pieces. Let's face it, Julie, Siren Radio is Lincoln Performing Arts Centre's very own community radio service. So there we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we're very, very, very lucky to have you.
Well, progressing on from that point of view, we'll be heading off in a few moments to our author of the week, which is actually a double author in many ways. O.E. Tierman, a writing duo from Colorado, who have released a new science fiction series in both print and audio format. The first book is entitled The Hands We're Given, and we'll be speaking to O.E. Tierman, otherwise known as Olivia Wiley and E.S. Argentum, and E.S. who goes by they or them. He's not, they're non-binary. So we'll be speaking to them in Colorado in a few moments. But before we go to our author of the week, we have a couple of standard lines which we need to put to Julie. Obviously, there is the Be Inspired line, which obviously goes without saying from that point of view as an essential. But I'm going to throw these at you in any case, Julie. They're the kind of variations that we've done in our new spanking version of Midweek Drive and indeed Inspired On Air and so on. And let's face it, dear listener, it was Julie Ellaby who actually coined the phrase Lincoln Inspired back in the day, which is one of the reasons why Sarah Bullimo is still thankful even today on that side of things. And indeed is also doing some great stuff with the Newark Book Festival. But Julie, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I certainly have. Thank you.
There we are. Notice the vocabulary change there. Zoomer. It's not a Zoomer. Telephonic link. It's a clear Zoomer from that point of view. We can't as yet go out. Well, I suppose we could have a coffee. You can have a coffee with our chicks. I'll have a coffee in my virtual world. So there we are. Or a tea or other things. But can we prevail upon you to return? Will you come back in this whole new exciting medium of online communications for the broadcasting world?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Author of the Week with Alex Lefchuk, and of course, another sensationally talented purveyor of perfect prose.
But who's the author?
Let's find out.
Aidan Headley never wanted to be the man giving orders. That's fine with the Democratic State Force base he's been assigned to command. They don't like to take orders. Nicknamed the Wild Cards, they used to be the most effective base against the seven corporations owning the former United States in a war that has lasted over half a century. Some of the précis of the recent release by Amphibian Press of the Aces High One Joker's Wild epic, The Hands We're Given, by, of course, O.E. Tierman, a fabulous writing duo. And we actually have one fabulous connection with respect to that writing duo with us at present, who's going to share with us some of the joys and wonderments of some of the things they've actually been producing. That, of course, is E.S. Argentum. How are you, E.S.?
I'm good. How are you, Alex?
Very good indeed. Now, share with us Aces High, Joker's Wild. How is this actually sort of developed, and how is it? Is it a prediction for where the United States is actually going to be heading?
We didn't intend it to be.
That's good to hear.
We actually started writing this in. Sorry?
That's good to hear. Carry on.
We started writing this in 2016 when everything kind of went bad. For lack of a better term. Both my co-writer, Olivia Wiley, and I were having some really hard personal times as well. And so we kind of looked at each other and said, what can we do to work through this and, you know, keep ourselves afloat? And we came up with the idea of writing together. And from that came the series, which as the... Sorry.
No, that's all right. Carry
back
on.
In the series.
So again, it works with that base. Now, intriguing insofar as Tierman actually comes from the Irish term of a noun meaning refuge, place of asylum, home or sanctuary. Now, the naming of things, as many people actually say, including Old Possum's book of wonderful cats, etc., is a wonderful thing. So is that something which you always had in mind in terms of a collaboration? Because obviously there are lots of cases of authors collaborating with each other and producing stuff and so on. Did you want to actually ensure that there was a statement made in terms of that's why we're calling ourselves O.E. Tierman?
Once we got to the point where we had decided to publish, yes. That took a couple years of Olivia bugging me and saying, hey, this story can actually help people and putting it out in the world can actually make a difference. But once we did get to that point, we were tossing ideas around and we both wanted a pen name that was more than just a name. We wanted it to mean something to us and then be able to, you know, say, hey, by the way, this is what it means. But one of the things that we were really, really adamant about when we started putting the series out was making it representative and making it hopeful. So despite the fact that we're talking about, you know, 150 years in the future when corporations are running America, the end goal is to bring democracy back and to make a more equitable and just society. And that's what our protagonists are fighting for. So it made sense to both of us to have a name that meant something like refuge, because the writing itself was a refuge for us. And we would like our stories to be able to be a refuge for other people who need it.
Looking at the oetierman.com website, I love the line, raising hell and changing minds one word at a time. Was that something, again, you had in mind, that actually it's writing very much as a proactive process as opposed to simply a reactive process to the world in which we find ourselves?
Again, kind of eventually. Because this project took several years, it really shifted a lot from the beginning. Because at the beginning, we were just writing for fun and to work out our own emotions, and things like Aiden's journey with gender is me kind of working out my own journey with gender as well. And then as we got further and as the world continued to, you know, devolve, we kind of looked at each other again and said, you know what, we can do something more with this. And then it kind of became our own private little quiet activism, because neither of us are, you know, the type that go to protests and things of that nature. And we're both financially struggling, so we can't do a whole lot of donations, but we can write and we can put out stories that represent diverse people and provide hope. And we actually have resources in the back of each book for mental health resources, GLBTQ resources, all of those sorts of things, because we wanted to have an impact. And we wanted to be able to say, hey, we know that we dealt with these really tough themes in this book. If you are struggling with those, here are some places you can go for help, instead of just saying, you know, go get help. So
I'm intrigued by the fact that when you're not actually writing, you're generally found playing video games, having existential crises, or indeed napping with your cat. Does the cat actually make an appearance with respect to the text? Does the cat actually inspire the writing?
Not really. We both have cats, and mostly they just get in the way. They're both very fond of napping on keyboards, which is problematic.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they could actually sort of create all kinds of new words and new concepts. It might just be a case of in choosing your good selves as their companions. They're just a little bit bemused in terms of what things are being done. I mean, it's a language issue, surely.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I have not been able to translate an entire page of A's and Q's yet, but... Yeah, maybe someday.
It'll happen. Now, as you mentioned, obviously your work is probably described as fantasy and science fiction romances centering on GLBTQ plus relationships. So it does work on that premise. We're living in a wonderful century where, on the one hand, there's an awful lot more acceptance of diversity, etc. On the other hand, actually, there's an awful lot of prejudice that comes into play as well. Do you kind of manage to get the balance between those challenges to the fore? And do you feel it actually serves as a creative stimulus for the kind of work that you produce?
Oh, it definitely serves as a stimulus for sure. Because both Olivia and I are part of the GLBT community. And so, you know, all of these laws trying to get passed and all of the bigotry and things affects us. And so it's one of those things that we can easily translate into our work instead of, you know, going out and becoming criminal. I think in the Aces High Jokers Wild series, for sure, I like to think that we have a nice balance between dealing with the realities of being a minority and also creating that hope of having a community and finding found family and being able to accept who you are and who the other people in your community are, and building that strong foundation of mutual support and community and being able to build from there. In my personal work, I tend to get completely away from reality and write in worlds where homophobia and transphobia and things aren't a thing. But in the Aces High series, I like to think that we definitely hit that balance.
Of course, there is the suggestion that actually there's no such thing as fiction, that our reality is somebody else's fiction and vice versa. But that's something else I tend to sort of reflect upon in various times. We were speaking in the early part of this hour's production with Julie Ellaby from the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. And clearly there's a case whereby we're gradually coming through the pandemic and so on. And let's talk a bit about the pandemic. Has that impacted at all on the writing? Has it improved your writing? Was it a case of, look, it's Denver, Colorado. We don't worry about things like pandemics. We've got the Rocky Mountains behind us. What's the kind of vibe been in terms of the way that the global issue has kind of impacted with respect to COVID-19? Has it been a positive? Have you had COVID dividends coming out of the work so that OE Tierman's been able to actually enhance the production? Or has it been a case of, well, look, it's a dystopia. Get it? It's a dystopia.
It's kind of interesting because we actually wrote the entire draft of the full series before we started publishing. So we have the entire series written already, and we're just kind of going through and making sure it's of good quality to publish before we put each book out. And book 5, I think, which just came out, it's either book 5 or book 6, actually has the base dealing with a waterborne pathogen that spreads like a pandemic. And when this first hit, both Olivia and I were just like, cool, so that's another thing we accidentally prophesied. As far as like production and things, it's actually it's made it a lot harder, because when I get stressed and worried about the world, I tend to kind of shut down, and Olivia is the opposite. She tends to completely dive headfirst into her projects and get completely obsessed. So it's been interesting finding a balance between that for the last year and a half of Olivia really wanting to work and me just, you know, wanting to depression sleep all day.
Well, astral traveling can be a positive way forward as well. So that's another sort of concept about the whole
another thing I haven't figured out yet. Dang it.
Well, let's have a look at, again, some of the written works that are actually out there. Of course, The Hands Were Given, Call the Bluff, Raise the Stakes, Aces High, Joker's Wild, The After Hours Game. Got to be saying that OE Tierman are very prolific writing side of things. I mean, is it a case of, is there a strategy that you say, do you actually wake up and have the discipline of actually saying, right, today before breakfast, we're going to produce 2,000 words, and then we'll do another 4,000 words after lunch, and then that's basically it?
Ugh, I wish I had that kind of discipline. Like I said, we actually have a full draft of the series that we had created over a couple of years. That was really just kind of this flurry of creativity between the two of us trying to inspire ourselves and just get through the really awful stuff. So having that is nice. And the general process right now is that Olivia will take a look at that very first really, really messy draft. And she likes to think of herself as a weaver. She weaves pieces together, makes sure that all the plot gaps make sense, make sure that the world is still coherent. And then she'll toss it to me, and I will make sure that all the character arcs still make sense, all the characterization is consistent, and everything still feels like a whole. And then we'll do another pass for just proofreading and things, and then we'll pass it to our beta readers and our sensitivity readers, and then do edits based on their feedback. And then it goes off to our publisher and we cross our fingers.
And in terms of advice for young writers of whatever particular persuasion who are sort of thinking of sort of following through the whole process and so on, would you say that there is no such thing as a one size fits all? You have to follow your own path and determine what works best for yourself, or are there kind of a line of strategies which you'd say, actually, this is the best way to actually approach this?
I think it's definitely, you have to find what works for yourself. Some people sit down and write, you know, a couple thousand words in the morning. Some people can't drag themselves out of bed. Some people work best in the middle of the night. Some people, like myself, I get bursts of creativity. I'll like power through something in a week and then not touch it for a month. As far as advice goes, just don't be afraid to experiment and try things. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, no problem. There is no rule for writing as long as you're writing. And whether or not that's as consistent as you want, that's just up to you and your mental health, unfortunately. Because I would love to write every day, but that's just not how my brain works.
And what is it that inspires E.S. Argentum? What sort of things? Is it the landscape? Is it the music? Is it the planet? What are the kind of inspirational things that you take on board? Or is it a case of, no, I'm a dystopian writer, everything's half empty?
Well, because in my personal work that's not O.E. Tierman related, I tend to write much more hopeful, sweet romance type things. I find a lot of inspiration just kind of in general life. People watching. Before the pandemic, I really liked to people watch. Now I get anxious being in public. But looking at, you know, couples walking down the street and trying to come up with, okay, well, what's their story? Or if I transposed these people into a fantasy world, what might they be doing? And then, like I mentioned earlier as well, kind of my own experience of moving through the world. Sometimes I'll have some sort of epiphany about my own identity and decide, hey, this needs to be a short story. Sometimes I'll have an invitation to an anthology and I have to fit within this specific box of the most recent one. Both Olivia and I actually are working on separately. Was about dinosaurs and dragons. So I had to write about dinosaurs or dragons in so many words. Luckily, I am a paleontology nerd, so dinosaurs were totally awesome for me. But I think inspiration can be found anywhere. So
I'm intrigued by the fact you also spent some time in Alaska, which is interesting. Yes. From that point of view. Did that kind of give you any areas that you thought, yeah, actually, I've always wanted to write about a pipeline, for instance?
No, actually. What's really entertaining is that when I was in Alaska, I went to Ireland for 3 weeks on my junior practicum. And that's kind of where I got my, I've always wanted to write about this idea. Alaska had nothing to do with it except sending me there.
Yeah, well, again, it opens up with that. Now, you've been writing certainly officially since you were 12. You've continued mm-hmm. from that point of view. Has writing always been the way in which you've used the art form to express yourself and to actually put thoughts down on paper? I've also got to ask the question, do you write with a pen, or is it a case of, no, if it's not the keyboard, then it's not worth writing?
I have kind of always used writing to express myself. A lot of it is really bad. Like journaling, poetry, things of that nature, but also working through things with my characters. And as far as tools, I kind of do both. I tend to write my rough draft longhand, which is actually a thing I just started last year, but is working really well for me. And then type it up, print it out, edit it by hand with a pen, and then get those edits into the computer. For me, it just helps to have that tactile sensation and kind of the difference between different stages of the project.
Yeah, many writers actually still say they prefer the whole notion of pen and ink, although perhaps going back to quill pen might be a step too far from that point of view. Let's talk very briefly.
I use a fountain pen, so.
Very good. Excellent. So let's go on to the Aces High series, Joker's Wild. Just for the uninitiated, talk us through the kind of the key characters that are actually there, how they develop. I mean, again, looking at the ways in which the characters manifest from that point of view, it does seem as though you've got a range, quite literally, of individuals who connect, including, of course, the character of Aiden.
Yeah, we actually kind of have an ensemble cast in that the first three books focus on Aiden and his boyfriend, spoilers for the first book, it's a romance, they're going to get together. His boyfriend, Kevin, the first three books focus on them, and then from there, the other books focus on other characters within the base as the story progresses. And we did that partially on accident, honestly, and partially because we wanted to showcase this diverse group and write from other points of view and make sure that we could really get that community feel and that found family feel. Aiden definitely came from me. He's my baby. He's a trans guy working in his first post as a commander with this group of absolute agents of chaos. And a lot of his issues are around his trans identity, but also around anxiety and depression and a lot of the mental health issues that I've struggled with as well. And so writing him was kind of cathartic to say, hey, okay, this is a lot of me, but also not completely me. And I can look at it from another side. And Kevin, who's the logistics officer, he's very kind of hoity-toity and very proper and obsessed with the 80s, the way that a lot of folks now are obsessed with the Victorian age and steampunk. And he came a lot from Olivia's mind because she's really into the 80s and 80s music. And they just kind of fell together. Yeah. And then the rest of the base, yeah, we kept adding characters as needed and then going back and refining them. And it's a very diverse cast. We have multiple queer identities, multiple ethnic identities, and various intersections thereof. And a lot of the story revolves around bringing those identities together into that found family and learning how to work together and learning how you can change the world together, but only together. You know, you can't do it yourself. You have to have this support and this community behind you.
And have you ever been tempted to actually go into the world of horticulture? And has Olivia ever actually turned around and said, look, we need to actually bring in some ethnobotany here?
That is actually Olivia's forte. That's what she does as a job, is horticulture, which is where she is today. She's out planting gardens. Mm. So that works in our favor. We don't need to find another expert for that.
No. So in terms of actually accessing the details, obviously you can go to argentumbooks.com. Any other sort of websites or areas you'd suggest that people should be checking out the works of O.E. Tierman?
OETierman.com, T-E-A-R-M-A-N-N. And the books are available pretty much wherever books are sold. We suggest and hope that you can buy indie and local if possible, but no, it's not always possible. So it's also on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and all of those places. We also have presences on Facebook and Twitter. We have a newsletter if you're interested in getting advanced copies or exclusive short stories now and then. And you can find that on the Tierman website. And I think that's it, hopefully.
Well, it's been great connecting with your good self today. E.S. Argentum, one of the duo that makes up, of course, Olivia Wiley and E.S. Argentum for O.E. Tierman. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. I've got to ask you, do you have a favourite character at all in terms of your writing? Because, I mean, some authors, they get particularly attached to an individual and they say, yeah, actually, don't do that. Or you kind of maybe put them through too much and you think, well, enough already. Are there any kind of areas which you describe the characters, but in terms of the range there, you have a preference for?
I mean, for me, it's definitely Aiden, just because so much of me is in him. And also he's just like such an, I don't want to say innocent. Innocent isn't the right word, but he has that kind of adorable, you want to protect him sense to him. And we definitely put him through hell.
Fantastic. Or indeed, as Churchill once said, if you're going through hell, the important thing is to keep on going. ESR Gentum, huge thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on. And we, I'm sure, will wait with great anticipation for the ongoing unraveling of more magical texts. Take care now.
Thanks, you too.
It's clearly one of the most important aspects of the human experience to know how to love one's neighbour as oneself, of course. But the question is, have we actually learned how to love our neighbour? With the COVID community spirit certainly being to the fore over the last year and a half, is it set to continue? Well, who better to actually speak to than indeed an awesomely talented individual who was actually a Great British Bake Off semi-finalist back in 2018. She's the TV presenter of Food Unwrapped. It's the awesome Bryony Mae Williams. How are you, Bryony?
Hello, what a lovely introduction. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Delighted to connect with your good self. Now, share with us this particular aspect. I mean, we all like to think that as we head towards the future, we will become much more virtuous. We will actually shop locally. We'll cook from scratch. We'll work together. But we know from our New Year's resolutions that sometimes the best of intentions can actually fall by the wayside. And is this research that the Big Lunch has actually come up with, is it too optimistic? Or do you think we're genuinely heading for a bright new world?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a new world, isn't it? A new normal. And I think this research is really heartwarming. And I genuinely hope that it will continue. I think something that's happened over the last year for everyone, it's made people reassess what's important in their lives. And people are looking locally, people are looking, to their neighbours and the people around them for support and for, you know, these networks that we've been building. And the research that the Big Lunch, which is supported by the National Lottery, has done, and it's shown that 12 million people now feel closer to their neighbours than they did pre-pandemic, which is a huge amount if you think about it. And I think, you know, those chats over the fence or while we're putting the bins out have been the highlight of a lot of people's year, because, you know, when you're stuck in your house and you can only talk to the people in your household, it's nice, even if it's just a 5-minute conversation over the fence, to talk to someone different.
I was going to say, because obviously it's a double-edged sword, really, in terms of you can't get too close to your neighbours and be socially distanced. You've got to bear those balancing things in mind, really.
Exactly, yeah.
You spoke, obviously, of the Big Lunch. Now, this is an annual date. It's to celebrate and give thanks to our neighbours. This is come out of an idea from the Eden Project. As you said, it's supported by the National Lottery and Iceland Foods. Is this something which you think, actually, we need to actually have to kind of drive us back into that connectivity to really connect with the people that we share our journey through life with?
Absolutely. I think it's the perfect way to build up those connections and really catch up with the people who we live by. And, you know, what better way to do it than over food? Food brings us all together, whether it's a cake or a quiche or a lovely curry, whatever you've made. It's something that people love to do together and enjoy together. And I think now that, you know, we are starting to get some aspects of normality back, if you can meet up outdoors safely in a socially distanced manner, then I think that this is a wonderful time to do it, whether you're in the garden or you go to a local park and, you know, sit on separate picnic blankets. You know, you make individual portions of things, so it's all nice and COVID safe. I think this is a wonderful time to celebrate those connections that we've made over the last year or over the last couple of years, and build on that and actually get to know each other.
You always strike me, Brian, as being somebody who always sees the glasses half full.
I do.
Yeah, well, there we go, which is nice. We need that optimism. Do you think that this has longevity, that actually, in terms of the systems that are in place here, that it's more than what I would say is the equivalent of the street party? I mean, we used to have a street party. We used to have it on, you know, Silver Jubilee, Golden Jubilee. People say, oh, we should do this every year. We don't. We might have one, of course, with the Platinum Jubilee that's coming up. But is it one of those areas where we almost need to make this part of our everyday schedule?
Yeah, I think it's going to take effort and commitment from people, but I hope what people have realised this last year, and I know a lot of people have, is how important those connections are and that the people are that are in our, you know, in our vicinity, that our neighbours are, our friends and family that are close by, and our local communities. Those are really important relationships. People have realised that this year. And if people can make the effort and consciously decide we really want to carry on doing this, then I don't see why it can't carry on.
Now, clearly, the best way to actually find out further details about this
fabulous thing, which is running from the 5th of June right the way through to July the 4th. Independence Day. Well, maybe we won't celebrate that after all. It's when America decided to actually tell us Brits to go away. is thebiglunch.com the best place to go to find out further ideas about the whole process?
Absolutely. Thebiglunch.com. There's so much information on there from, you know, even just going and talking to your neighbours or putting a note through their door, you know, to recipes, to how to do everything safely in COVID times. It's you know, a fountain of information. So, yeah, thebiglunch.com.
And with a fifth of people surveyed suggesting that they actually care more now about things going on in their local community, do you feel that, again, that is something which bodes well for the next few years at least?
I hope so. I really hope so. I think, you know, people have reevaluated what's important and realised that, you know, you don't have to look really far away for wonderful things in your life. It can be, you know, your next door neighbour or something, you know, an event going on in your local community. So here's hoping people keep on enjoying what's around them.
And are there any words of wisdom for yourself, Brian, about, shall we say, the neighbour that might be seen as a bit reticent to get involved? People actually saying, oh, you know, I've got nothing to actually offer. I'm a lousy corker. Everything's pre-packed, etc. I can't work on that system. What sort of thoughts would you actually say they should actually do? Feel the fear and do it anyway. Take that leap of faith.
Absolutely. I'm very much a believer in, you know, if you don't try something, you never know. So even if you've gone, you know, gone to your local shop and bought a pre-made cake or whatever, you know, or you've just tried and it hasn't quite worked, but bring it anyway. Just get out there. You never know who you're going to meet, who you're going to talk to, what connections you might make.
Brian A. May Williams, a huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. Actually, we do have two final questions to ask you, Brian. There are kind of customer satisfaction ones. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Yes, it's been delightful.
Excellent. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future? Will you return to the Midweek Drive?
Yes, absolutely. Why not?